say a few words to frame up and put in some of the terms I'll be referring to over the weekend. So the theme of the indestructible heart is a affirmation of faith and realization of the Buddha, the deathless or the unconditioned, that which is not afflicted by pain, sorrow, fear, worry, all these conditions that can seize us and make us feel very wobbly, defended, locked in, thrown around and squashed. So we're looking at something that's deathless, is not some kind of metaphysical I'm going to be immortal, but just the freedom of the heart from these crushing and limiting experiences. So we can take it at that level. It's something we can refer to in this life. It's sort of an unbounded heart. So to do so, first of all, just to bear in mind that there is this, but what we often experience in terms of heart is a lot of wobbling, wavering impulses and reactions. Yeah. So there's that also, and the process is to settle, penetrate, see through that layer or that structure which gets us activated, reactive, defended, agitated, and to see through that to an unconditioned or a freedom. And to do this, we have to first of all begin to acknowledge the sense of the unconditioned, but also acknowledge clearly what the conditioning is, and what is it that destroys the heart day by day, nibbles away at its joy, squashes its freedom, squashes its happiness, limits its potential, restricts, stifles, suppresses, what is it that does that? And can we see that, and can we release that, find a way to release that? So most of our practice is about the path. The goal or the realization is there, we hold that as a faith or something we may even have touched into from time to time, but we're not really going to be kind of defining that too much, but just to recognize there is that freedom, and with that in mind, can some of that potential also be there as that which facilitates our path? So can we be free from distraction? So obviously distraction is going to hinder our path. Free from aggression, free from reaching out, free from distractedness, free from regret, free from fear, free from self-criticism, free from these forces that very much day by day limit and constrict our heart. Can we see them as what they are? Compulsiveness. Compulsiveness, addiction, clinging, this experience that we all have. And it's the way that we habituate our lives. We have kind of things we do, routine, things we feel we've got to do, ought to do, or just do to pass away the time. There's a sense of compulsive attachment to activities. That and scenarios that offer us the possibility of staying in shape. They give us a definite track to run down. This is Monday, this is Tuesday, it's 6 o'clock, it's time to switch that on. Let's go there because everybody else does. Got to do this. it's certain habits and compulsions that offer us, well, they offer us a sense of automatic, don't have to be in an open, slightly unformed state, something is there for us. And if you're in doubt, push a button and something will pop up that you can get activated by. So this is a very strong habit for humans. Entertainments, not that these are sinful, but they are, why do we need so much? Why do we now carry around these little items, these rectangles in our hands, so that not any moment of the day we can have something we can touch, switch on, give us something to get activated about. Read some news, read an article, phone somebody, look at something. You know. Why is it so necessary? And at the same time, something is just crying out for, I wish I had more peace and more space. More space and more openness and less things to do, but right now I've got to do this. Yeah. Or plan the place where I can go, where I can find some space. Spend a lot of time working my life out so I can get things tidied up, so in the end I will find some space and some openness and some peace and some ease. It must be so nice, you know, maybe living in a monastery where you can have a hole out in the forest. We have these kutis in the forest, huts in the forest, where you have all the space, all the time in the world, just to be out with nature. And nothing to do. No, nobody bothering you, nothing to do. Doesn't it sound great? It is for about 4 minutes. And then it's, yeah, well, a cup of tea, walk around, look at something, read a book. Something that really wants that and is attracted by that, but yet something else moves in very determinedly. We feel agitated, we feel lost, we feel under-energized. Not enough is happening. I feel formless, I feel shapeless, I feel I haven't got any ground, no foundation. I've got something to hold on to do, to be. Something, a future to plan. Something to talk to. Something to engage with. Without that, I just go flat and stale and wonky. Without that, I feel confused. So this kind of compulsive quality in us, seeking activation, seeking to get something to get activated by. Many of these can be, you know, useful, interesting, necessary, but you begin to see through it when you recognize, well, for example, on terms of internet usage, most of it is games, you know, computer games. People have apps. Most common app is a game. You can play moving squares around or something or the other. Sudoku, crosswords, entertainment. These are not necessary. Yeah, they're not important. They're not urgent. They're not helping the world. You know, which other activities we can justify them as, oh, this is necessary, this is helping other people. You've got to do something, you just can't sit around there doing nothing all day. You try it. You know, and you realize it's not just altruism that gets us going. It's not just physical necessity that gets us going. There's something else that gets us going. It's much more compulsive than that. Yeah. So when we meditate, you know, what you can begin to see these same things, you know, get triggered by a memory, by a plan, by a sensation, by memories of other people, attitudes about ourselves. You get the triggering and then things, the wheels start running. This activation is called, the Buddhist word for it, sankhara. Sankhara are energetic formations. They form creative energies. And they propel thoughts, they propel emotions, they propel images and perceptions, they propel moods, they also propel bodily, subtle bodily actions, such as flinching, wincing, shaking, tensing, so they're very fundamental. They also propel the breathing. So when we meditate, essentially what we do is we use these sankharas, these propelling creative energies, and we deliberately steer them, tune them into ones that are to do with calming, deactivating the tensions or the jaggedness, the raggediness of the mind. So we develop activations around breathing in and out, around space, around silence, around loving kindness, around respect, around the sacred. We activate in that way. We generate something that will act as a domain, as a field, as a self experience that helps to discharge or remove or unplug these other activations. This is called meditation. That's why we do it. Now, as we all know, meditation, just sit there, cross your legs, stop thinking, and enjoy. But it doesn't happen, does it? Or it happens maybe a little bit now and then. A lot of the time what happens is as we enter that, we hit our activation web and we start jangling and whirring, and or we slump, we find ourselves feeling a loss of something to connect to, so we just wooze out, or we find ourselves feeling very restless or compulsive thinking coming up. We hit our activation network, and to get through that network, you imagine like a net, and you've got to find your way through the holes in the net or the apertures, and we keep hitting the strands of the net and getting stuck in it. It's quite a fine mesh. So this is what we need to work through, and as sankharas are energetic, dynamic, we need to, my suggestion and my practice is about working with them very much at a level of energetic, by which I mean the more subtle energy, such as the energy of calm is an energy, just as agitation is an energy. We're not looking about muscle power, talking about mental energy, heart energy, and also subtle body energy which is associated with the energy with breathing in and out. Now, so breathing in and out, of course, we can recognize the flow of air. What I'm talking about is the energy flow that accompanies that. In fact, that's the energy flow, that is the primary thing that gets you breathing. You don't decide to breathe in and out. Well, you may do, but most of the time it just happens by itself, because it's an automatic. These sankharas are kind of they're beneath reason. You see what I mean? That's why we can't reason their way out of them. They're before reason, and in some ways that's good, because if I had to keep remembering to breathe in and out, I'm sure I'd be dead by now. Because other things would, oh, look at that, oh, forgot to breathe, dang it. Another one gone. So this is happening all the time, but something, because it's so normal for us, we don't really consider it. Something knows when it's time to stop breathing in. You get to a point where you just cannot breathe in anymore. Much as you try or want to, you can't breathe in anymore. Something in the body registers that sense of pressures, sensations, and even a certain fulfillment of energy, because breathing in essentially powers up, brightens, energizes, And then something said, oh, that's enough, we're complete now, and now's the time to breathe out. And it knows how to do that, how to trigger off the muscles that bring breathing out around. You don't have to remember about your intercostals or your throat or your diaphragm. It just does it. You've got this very prime. And then when you breathe out, there's a point in which you can't do that anymore. And something finds the time, the moment, to start the process again of breathing in. Now that's a sankhara. There's an energetic thing that's operating that, and it has an intelligence. When I say intelligence, it means it reads and assesses and gives a message. I don't mean it's always wise, but it's got intelligence to it. So this is the primary one, and we associate that with breathing in and out. When we touch into it and we are able to just really allow that to happen, just hand it all over to that formation, what can occur is a sustained unplugging or unconnecting of the programs, the creative energies, the sankharas that are to do with driving, forcing, worrying, doubting, hindrances, essentially. Because the quality of as the body experiences calm, the heart picks up that signal and feels safe. Now, the other thing I'd like to say around that, necessary to say at this point, is that emotions, which we very much associate with the heart or the immaterial plane, begin in the body. They don't begin in your knees, but they begin in the body intelligence. By which I mean, you hear the bang and you flinch, and as your heart starts pumping, you feel fear. But it happens like that. You don't feel the fear and then your heart starts pumping. What happens is you hear the crash, the bang, and you jump, and the heart starts pumping, and there's a fear, and you look around, oh, it's all right, and then it can come down again. But it doesn't come down like that. When you see the danger is over, it's not like there's no danger, end of fear. There's a moment or two because the body has to get back to rest state. You look at a powerful emotion like that. Same with anger. There's bristling, threatening, bristling. And if you're angry and then okay, the source of the anger has disappeared. And for a while you're still sort of feeling, until eventually the thing has settled and the body settles down again to rest state. So what's happening is something signals or triggers. It could be a sight, it could be a sound, it could be a thought, it could be a word, it could be a memory. Something triggers, the body feels it, picks up that trigger, goes through the mind, through the basic consciousness, mental consciousness or sense consciousness, into the body. The body reacts and the result is an emotion. Now the emotion is then languaged or experienced as fear, anger, happiness, joy, so forth. These are the words, and we recognize those emotions. Something triggers. Triggering is called sanya, perception. Something creates an impression. You see something large coming rushing towards you. The impression is, before you even describe it as a bus, the impression is, bigger than me, large, come rushing this way, fear. You'd be an idiot not to experience that. Now, of course, it may just be an image on a screen. But you go to a cinema and these are images on the screen. There's nothing really there at all. Nothing whatsoever is going to harm you, and you will still feel fear when, the baddie comes out with a big knife or somebody's shooting something. You still feel the fear because the triggering is occurring, right, through visual. Even though in your brain you just paid £10 or whatever, as you're in a cinema, there is a film out there, it's not going to touch you at all, still you feel fear. The triggering, visual triggering, trumps reason. And we feel it in our bodies. So, feel it in the body, and then there's this sort of welling up of these emotions and moods. And with entertainment, even horror movies and things like that, something about that experience that kind of flushes energy around, and we go out feeling, well, that was great, you know, sort of totally frightened out of my mind. What a great show that was. Because it was held in a safe place, and I could come out of it, you know, and discharge the fear, the anxieties, the worries, and other stuff that was flushing around, feeling bored, feeling fed up, feeling miserable. And a good charge of something rushing through your nervous system cleans the other stuff out. So we go to, you know, entertainments, horror shows, thrillers, whatever. You know, we get a solid flush, stuff rushes through it, and it sort of gives us a temporary cleaning, catharsis, the Greeks would call it, tragedy. You know, horrible things being done, murders, gory scenes, tragedy, people stand, watch it, have a catharsis and come out feeling cleaner. You know, so this triggering sankhara starts flushing and rushing around, energy is moved, there's definitely a palpable effect at the end of it. There's something that we can discharge and feel fresher again. Sanya, the trigger, it's not reasonable. You know, the monster in the movie is not going to harm you, but still the trigger is there and you feel the fear, the suspense and so forth. So it's not reasonable, but it's there. And it causes sanya, triggers sankhara. Sankharas are these formative energies which occur both at an emotional level or trigger off emotions and also trigger off bodily energy. We feel aroused, we feel activated and so on. And those two, why we go to entertainment is because those two will actually so flood the system that the thinking mind, with its endless problems and confusions, can't get a word in. For the moment we feel some peace because our nattering mind, nattering thinking is suppressed by these other powerful feelings. Sanya, sankhara, these are the Buddhist terms for this, these two faculties or khandhas of the human being. And sanya is also associated with feeling. And the Buddha says all things, all experiences converge on feeling. All experiences converge on feeling. This is a, you know, it's this very simple, modest statement, but it means basically we don't operate fundamentally through reason, logic, we operate through feeling. Feeling is the thing that pushes the button and we get activated. You know, ideas we play with, pleasure and pain we obey. Absolutely. We see something pleasant, we want it. Yeah. See something painful, we're immediately triggered to defend ourselves from it, whether it's reasonable or not. So therefore we'll run away from a spider, which is like maybe 1.5 centimeters wide, perhaps weighs a couple of, maybe half a gram. There's this lunking great hunk of meat at 70 kilos that could squash it. And we will run away from this thing. Or feel fear or aversion from it. You know, what's the reason of that? Creepy crawly. Ooh. Totally unreasonable. And yet, the feeling, the perception, wriggly thing, fast wriggly thing going to run up my legs or down my neck, wriggle around, unpleasant perception, feeling, and ugh. And a lot of spiders, good spiders, have lost their lives because of that protection. Harmless spiders and so on lost their lives because of that perception. Now, though the senses, the eye and nose, tongue and body can provide, you know, distinct triggering, for the human being, the main, even larger problem is the triggering that's produced by mental perceptions, by ought-tos, by never will, by they don't like me, by I've got to do, by I'm not welcome here, by she hurt me, by he let me down, by he's always on my case, by I don't like the look of that, you know, by memories, by oh, 5 years ago I did that, by I wasn't really kind to my son, daughter, mother, husband, wife, dog, whatever, yeah. So these, because these are not located in space or time, you know, they're located in the mind, so they can't walk in the door and out again like a dog or a spider could. When you say, oh, it's gone, here it is, now it's gone, in the mind they're always potentially there, yeah. And so so that any time any of these can be triggering, and many of them remain on kind of orange alert a lot of the time, perhaps not so conscious because other thoughts and sense impressions are sitting on top of them. And I would suggest that for many humans, one of the reasons why we have so much activity is to put enough on top of this underlying mental activity to stamp it down. You know, why we entertainments, why we're doing that is to damp down this underlying mental activity, mental triggering of I'm not okay. Things aren't okay with me, he doesn't like me, I did this yesterday, I never will be able to, I really am one of these, and this stuff is like a corrosive that's gnawing away at the joy, the freedom, the space, the openness, the confidence, the strength of the heart. So we're actually being corroded and chewed up by these mental perceptions and sankharas, doubt, will I, won't I, will I ever, what am I? Doubt doesn't mean I haven't got the information, it means I don't feel confident in myself, I feel ungrounded, what is it I'm missing out on that will give me that sense of clarity and strength and conviction and purpose? Perhaps I should try this. And though we can give these psychologies mental names such as doubt, depression, anxiety, irritability, grumpy, defensive, incommunicative, I feel very shy, I don't feel I can be open with people, I feel nervous in the company of other people, I always feel a bit intimidated by other people or certain kinds of people. We give them mental names, and indeed they do, those names are relevant. What I'm suggesting is that their basis has a bodily constituent to it. and that we can't really resolve those psychological enemies without undoing their bodily and their emotional, their basic sankhara forms. And there are two essentially, I don't know if you're getting all this, maybe it's a bit much for a Saturday morning. Let's just rest for a few moments. Yeah, the good bit is in sight, don't worry. It is possible. But it does mean, in broad colloquial terms, touching into your discomfort. And not and undoing the story that goes on around that, and just getting back to that place of some discomfort, and essentially being able to be aware of that, that there is a heart that is bigger than this. There is an awareness that's bigger than this, yeah. And it's not even when you get rid of this, you'll find this. This awareness that's bigger than this is already here. But we're focusing on the wrong bit. So there's a sense of what I'm suggesting is we can focus on the area of some discomfort, and particular suggestions and meditative practices in that very state of dukkha touch into, oh, this is the non-dukkha, this is the absence of that, this is the space around that, this is the receiving of that, this is the, yeah, there's another quality here. If I bear the two in mind, this uncomfortable thing will actually begin to release into that which is present, aware, comfortable, open, unconstricted. If there were not this, there would be no way out. So the Buddha says, if there were not the conditioned could not be known. That's very succinct, and perhaps conditioned, what's a conditioned anyway? What's the big deal about that? It means without the absence of fear and worry could not be realized, understood, and released. Because there is that. Because there's a freedom from that, and the freedom of that is actually not delayed in time. It's through meditative skill in terms of present consciousness that we can begin to open out of that. So the model I would present is not of something that's delayed in time, like when you get rid of this particular problem that you have. If you didn't have this problem, you'd be able to meditate. If you weren't like this, you'd be all right. Once you get rid of this doubt, you'll arrive at this space. But no, right in your doubt, in your problem, if you hold it in the right way, you'll begin to discern a non-problem. Yeah. And the non-problem will cause that problem, will stop that problem being activated. Now, this is because the nature of sankharas, as the Buddha pointed reminds us, is they are impermanent. They seem permanent. We seem to be a permanent, solid person with these configurations because those energies are running 24/7. They're running all the time, or perhaps not all the time, but you can find yourself shifting into a particular set of patterns. Here I am being mothering, Oh, here we go again, fussing, holding on, looming over, worrying, stop doing that bit. That particular set of patterns rolls in. Here I am being organizing, and that particular persona moves in or whatever, So these patterns, because they're ready, they're fluent, there's a certain compulsion to them, because in them you know who you are. You're familiar with them, you operate through them. Therefore we go into those patterns, like I'm teaching all the time, here I'm doing it again. You go into that, and who's that? Who is that anyway? What's the pressure? And you start to sense, and you can widen out of it. As they see Vipern, because they run, and they run compulsively, and they run in a familiar way, so it seems like a permanent state. But if we, again, bear in mind, it's very simple teaching on impermanence and not self, and touching into the dukkha. Again, this is really pretty basic meditative stuff, isn't it? Nothing that new. But really touching into the dukkha is our place of work, place of sensing out, and then this dukkha is supported by a formation of sankhara whose nature is essentially subject to change. It could change if you didn't keep it running. It would automatically change by itself. You don't have to change it, you just stop running it, then it will, by itself, it will change. This is the bit. And not self. Self is the image that helps it to stay permanent. Self is the notion that helps the sankhara to stay locked. I am this, I always am this, I don't want anybody else to know I am this, but really I am one of these. And I never will be this, and I ought to be that, so I've got to do that because everybody wants me to be this. And I should be this because everybody's told, I think everybody wants me to be this, so I don't ever ask them. Because these are not rational triggers. These are irrational, perceptual triggers. So because I am this and I never will be that, and I've got to be that, and make sure I'm always like that, that holds these sankharas in place. You keep running the same program, keep running your self program again and again and again. So, you know, so compulsively that it gets to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's who you are. Now, one of our struggles, first of all, to even touch the dukkha without and predicting the change. Yeah. So, okay, this unhappiness is going to change into happiness. Don't know about that. That's predicting it, isn't it? What I want to be is confident, clear, bright, alert, awake, joyful, peaceful. That's what I want. And I'm in this state, I feel muddy, confused, tangled up. Can I get from this state to that state? Maybe. But it's not a direct and immediate route. Because the energies have to reassemble themselves. Just like, you know, when the source of fear or anger disappears from your eyes, it takes a while for you to settle down again. Things are sort of shaking up and stirring around and wavering around, and you breathe in and out and you find your body and you feel okay again. It takes could take a minute, could take an hour. Sorrow can take 6 months, you know, mourning, before you've come back into some form or another. Things have settled, depending on how deep that program was embedded. So similarly, we might very well end up with joyful, peaceful, awake, but the chances are that we're going to go into, what's this? Confused? Is this, am I doing the right thing? How's this? Sort of feeling things are loose, things are molten, things are unsteady. Hold on, just keep breathing in and out. Relax, steady, and let the sankhara as it unplugs, it gets a bit wobbly and confusing, like something frozen is melting. It takes some moments, some minutes, some hours before it finally finds a complete healthy pattern. Right. So we've got to make bear in mind that when we allow things to change, they're not immediately going to change to, I'm better now. Finger snap, here I am, wisdom, truth, joyfulness, loving kindness, there it is. Not yet. But isn't it a relief just to allow things to change, just allow yourself not to be who you're supposed to be, or who you dread you are, or what you think you're not, or never will be. Just to, don't have to do that. There's a certain relief that comes quite quickly. So this is the process, anicca, dukkha, anatta. And when we come out of patterns, we partly because they're held by our sense of what we are, and remember, what we are can also be what I'm not. I'm not lovely, I'm not enjoyable, I'm not much fun, I'm not a nice person. It can be what I'm not that's holding it. What I never will be. My failure. Yeah. I'm too old for it now anyway, let's face it. So I started this when I was 25, I might have had a chance, but 60, what's the point? You can do that. No? Anytime you want to wake up, 95 is fine. So what I'm not can be one way of describing what's holding in. Look at the way we limit it, and all that will be bound up with self and permanence. And so it's coming out of that. Yeah. It's difficult. So, I'm saying that our process is going to be bodily, because the body comes out of it a lot easier than the mind does. The mind can run those patterns, those thoughts, those triggers, keep triggering yourself back into your guilt, regret, inadequacy program with a thought, with a comparison, with an idea, and trigger the whole thing again. So we start to abandon our triggerings of perfect meditation, deep samadhi, flawless awareness, pure loving kindness. Put those things down. If they're used in the wrong way, they'll always trigger you, the fact that you're not them yet. And let's face it, let's be honest. The amount of stuff you've done, you're not going to get there, are you? So that those psychological triggers are much more pervasive and corrupting and seductive than the visual and so forth. So we open into the don't know. Okay. I want to do something practical, since I've been talking for 40 minutes. So a couple of other pieces, very practical pieces. The Buddhist word for it is yoni soma nisikara, which means something like deep attention or full attention or insightful attention. Insightful attention. I'd like you to really get familiar with this, because it's something you can operate outside of a meditation retreat. You can use it on the bus. You can use it in 3 minutes. You can do something useful in a minute of this, wherever you are. And it really is important, because those triggers are going to happen any old time. They're not just going to they're not going to happen just on a meditation retreat. They're going to happen all the time. And many of them won't even happen on a retreat. They'll happen outside. So you want to have something that you can use that, you know, is portable. And this is a very portable one. It's the, I might say, the precursor to meditation. It's the herald. It's the door opener. And essentially what it does is it gets to the point. You know, there can be a complex situation, a complex scenario occurring, and it breaks it down into one thing. What's the real bit here? So through, you know, we might have a scenario of our future, our financial situation, state of the house, health concerns. Let's crunch that down one bit. What is it? Worry. Got it. Okay? So it can come down to that. We read, so it scans, it doesn't actually contribute to the train of thought or the cascade of emotion, but it casts a wide focus, a wide net over the whole thing, scoops it in and says, just what's the one, this gets you to the trigger. What's the trigger that's right now poking in your heart? Worry, perhaps. Overwhelmed is another one. Just too much. Can't handle it. Just overwhelmed. You know, there's the bills, there's this and that, and overwhelmed. So you just try to get it down to the one word, because this will at least reveal what the trigger is. The heart does not experience, you know, the reactive heart does not experience the whole story. It experiences one trigger. And the one trigger is one point. The heart does not deal with future, past, other people, myself. It deals with fear, worry, overwhelm, can't manage, threat, defense, welcome, unwelcome, interesting, attractive. Then you go. You go for it. So you want to get to that one point. And so this is the method of it. You review, or you can witness a train of thought or a train of emotions, and you summarize it in one, you can summarize in one word. And the word could be even thing like shaky. What's that? Well, I don't know, but that's what summarizes it. It could be, you know, shaky means, it's interesting, what does it mean? No ground, no stability, nothing underneath me, no support. You know. And then we come into that, no trust, no trust. Oh. And when these, what you recognize with these is you hold the word and you resound it, it may change into other words. And when it really gets you, you feel something goes, ah. You know, there's a sort of a resonance there. The bell is resounded. Because it's always, however relative and topical and just today's issue it is, actually what we're dealing with is fundamental universal experiences. Fundamental, not personal experiences. They happen in personal context. We're looking at fundamental universal experiences such as no trust. That is frightening. No support. Threat. Or welcome. What a beautiful trigger that one is. You're welcome. You know, take a rest. Rest. You know. Oh. Enjoy. Oh. You know. So these triggers. And unfortunately for the human being, sorry, is that the triggers that get us most immediately are negative ones. We're much more rapidly going to refer to fear than enjoyment. Yeah. The simple analogy is, if you get show a rabbit, a carrot and a wolf, what do you think it's going to react to? first, because if it doesn't react to that wolf, there's not going to be a carrot. And we're pretty much the same. So often our most immediate triggering is going to be to do with fear, loss, not safe, not welcome, and so on. But dukkha. And through meditative skill, we begin to touch into a quality in us that is welcome, is grounded, is safe, is open, always receives us. And through putting these two together, we can come out of the shock into the stability and the peace. So we name the trigger, hold the trigger carefully in full awareness, without reacting or suppressing it, breathing through it, relaxing the body, opening the heart, and this is what will allow that particular trigger and sankhara to be held, known, and if we don't keep energizing it, it will discharge. We energize it by either by thinking more about it, by worrying about it, by naming yourselves at it, by saying, I always am, I never will be, it's his fault, they always do this, all this energizes it. So you keep cutting that, go back to the raw feeling, the primary feeling, hold that in space, in openness, with no time restrictions, breathing through. And that's the way these things discharge. And it's not a finger snap, but you can feel the sense of, oh, well, at least I'm meeting the real thing. I see a change. I see a dawn. I see something possible coming. By itself, not through me, you know, rallying something or coming up with an answer, just by itself something arises, something manifests, something clears. That's the beauty of awakening. Okay, so do it. There we have the map. Let's